Hello, guys and girls. The program you are about to hear will be both fun and educational, but it is not a substitute for medical advice. Although we are doctors, we are not your doctors. Hello, and welcome to Travel Medicine. As always, I'm your friendly neighborhood internal medicine doc, Dr. J.
Hey guys, Dr. Santosh here, your friendly neighborhood pediatric infectious disease doc and researcher.
I see we've retired the interrupting doctor shtick.
That's not even retired. That's like a one-off. Because I was like, this can get me in trouble with my homies pretty quickly.
Welcome back, loyal listeners. Thank you for rejoining us for the next of our 12 Days of Christmas holiday series.
I like our series. You know, we did our antibiotic series, and now we're doing our, you know, like our 12 Days of Christmas. It keeps us actually coherent, whereas we're like normally insane and chaotic.
Yeah, if you guys could see the actual behind-the-scenes production work that goes into making this podcast, well, let's just say you're never going to see it.
Oh, look at that. Dr. Josh found shame. It's a Christmas miracle.
Well, at least I have all those lumps of coal to keep me warm through the winter.
Oh, no. I'm sure you've been a good boy. I'm sure Santa's going to get you a present for your stocking.
Well, Santosh, for this episode of the 12 Days of Christmas, I thought it'd be fun to actually go over the medical conditions enumerated in the song, The 12 Days of Christmas.
Oh, like five golden rings and everything?
Yeah. Okay. Now, I found out that you were unaware of this the other day, but the 12 Days of Christmas start on Christmas and carry into January.
Yeah, that was very strange to me. I thought, you know, it's kind of like that old Advent calendar. I thought it was a countdown to Christmas.
No, the Christmas season runs from Christmas Day until January 6th, which is known as Twelfth Night. And Yes, that is the same Twelfth Night referenced Shakespeare. That was a play performed on the last of the 12 Days of Christmas as a comedy. And, you know, all ye old partiers would have a big blowout feast to wrap up all the celebratory season. And the religious significance of the 12 Days of Christmas is it marks the span between the birth of Christ and the coming of the Magi, the three wise men.
Sure.
It's also known sometimes as Three Kings Day, as well as Twelfth Night. And
because they were all kings from the Orient land where my people were from.
Your dude brought the frankincense.
See, at least I know what that is. You know, it's incense. We in Canada, it's oud bati. I know about incense, you know, but I'm still way lost on this myrrh situation. I have no idea. I'm still scared of myrrh.
Get over myrrh. Come myrrh.
That doesn't make it any better. that's the Monty Python gag I'd love to see. I brought him some myrrh. Oh my God, the third wise.
Some myrrh what? I brought him some myrrh what?
Myrrh.
Well, there's a great joke I also, Virgin Mary, absolutely. That's why three strange dudes showed up with gifts when she had a kid. Santosh, how well do you know the song The 12 Days of Christmas?
Oh, damn it. You get a little past five golden rings.
No one remembers anything besides five golden rings.
Partridge in a pear tree, two calling birds?
Nope.
No, three calling birds.
Nope.
No. Four calling birds, three French hens, two turtle doves. Holy, there are so many birds.
There's a lot of birds, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment.
Can we do the countdown first?
All right, so let's start. 12 drummers drumming.
11 pipers piping.
10 lords a-leaping.
9 ladies dancing.
8 maids a-milking.
Okay, so now we're in like the girl section kind of thing. Okay, now it's all birds. 7 swans a-swimming.
6 geese a-laying.
Okay, 5 gold rings. Cool.
Which actually are either golden ring-necked pheasants or gold finches, which were in Old English gold sphinx, which could sound like gold rings.
Oh, still more birds.
I was
thinking, because, you know, the true love gave to me, I was thinking, okay, threw all these birds at this chick, and then he's just like, okay, just please don't leave. Here's 5 gold rings.
listen, there's good eating on all those birds back in the day.
But the poor thing, like the swans are just swimming, and the geese are trying to lay some eggs, and
you would eat the swans, and you'd eat the goose eggs, and you'd eat the pheasants, and then we get to four calling birds. It used to be 4 collie, you know, like Lassie, collie. Collie birds, and collie was a way to refer to blackbirds. So it's actually 4 blackbirds.
Oh, okay. So collie birds are calling birds, and then you go ahead, you do 3.
3 French hens, which are fat ducks, because the French would fatten up their birds with foie gras.
They'd overstuff food down there.
So a French hen is just a fat duck.
Okay. Turtle doves is really simple, right? This is the symbol of peace. We're not eating these birds. 2 turtle doves. Okay.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
And then does the partridge get left alone? Is that cool?
The partridge is fine. And now, there have been one of the urban legends that has been disproven time and time again is that these stood for secret coded messages for Catholicism at a time when Catholicism was oppressed. Okay. And Catholicism has not been oppressed for a long time, you guys. And also, it would probably not be the best idea to hide secret coded messages about Catholicism. You probably wouldn't need to do it, given that it's a Christmas song. So if you're already celebrating Christmas, you're probably coasting along just fine. But first, what are medical conditions associated? So the first week, that whole first week of Christmas, nothing but birds.
Yeah, that's a shit ton of birds. And I would not recommend cavorting with this many birds.
You are going to get so many bird-related diseases, and let's talk about them.
Okay, yeah.
Santosh, tell me about these bird-related diseases.
Yeah.
Which ones are the most likely that I could catch from a partridge, turtle doves, fat ducks, blackbirds, goldfinches, geese, and swans?
So to tell you the truth, I'm kind of being a bad ID or infectious disease doc, because I know that if you have a lot of birds in one spot, so for instance, if you're taking care of pigeons in a coop, or if you are a zookeeper, these birds, smaller birds, can transmit a form of, you're going to love this actually, it's a form of chlamydia. It's not the sexually transmitted chlamydia, but it's a cousin to the.
So it's not like the koala chlamydia.
No, but the koala chlamydia is sexually transmitted, just among koalas. But this is called chlamydia sittici or sittici, depending on who you talk to, and this is also a species of chlamydia, but it lives in the guano of the birds, and if you inhale it too much, it gets into your lungs and it can cause a bad pneumonia. So, what are the others? So if you're in an abattoir and you're taking care of, you know, pigeons, they would get it. If you're a zookeeper, people who do those really sad, those illegal chicken fights. Or if you're a farm worker and you're working in a hen coop, then you can be exposed to psittacosis if your animals are sick from that disease. So I don't know if any of these specific birds carry psittacosis, but there are some birds that carry psittacosis.
All right. Then I guess we'll move on to one that you could get. Now, I know we talked about a partridge, but there is, in fact, a partridge pigeon native to Australia. A little bit different than the partridge. Okay. But I bring it up because pigeons can carry Cryptococcus.
Yes, they can. And Cryptococcus used to be this thing that, I was scared of it if you know, we had people who were immune compromised. So this was an AIDS-related disease. And if you went around birds too much and you had a low CD4 count, you know, that specific type of white cell was too low, then, you know, you'd worry about getting, you know, cryptococcal meningitis, actually, Josh. So it would, you'd inhale it, right? This is a little fungus. And then it would get into your bloodstream via your lungs and then get into your cerebrospinal fluid. And the scariest thing about this, it would cause increased intracranial pressure. So it would kind of squeeze your brain, you know, while it inflamed in there. But believe it or not, Josh, in the Great Northwest, Pacific Northwest, there is a Cryptococcus species called Gattii. And this one, you know, carried, you know, a lot by our little feathered friends. And this one can actually attack people even if they're not immune compromised. It's kind of a more aggressive Cryptococcus.
Send you right to the crypt.
Yeah, it will. So, yeah, this is not one to be messed with. But unfortunately for some immunocompromised people, they can catch this and get sick from this, even if they don't have a ton of exposure.
Yeah. So there you go. There's your turtle doves and others. Now, technically, that's a fungus, and I believe so is the next one that we're talking about, which is histoplasmosis, which you can see with birds and bats. It's native in the U.S. to the Midwest, I believe, like the Ohio River Valley area.
Well, so that one is blastomycosis, but you have some overlap with histo as well. So these are the dimorphic fungi or endemic fungi. When it's cold outside, baby, it's cold outside, they turn into molds and they sporulate. But when you inhale them, they turn into a yeast form. And so they're dimorphic, depending on if they're warm or if they're cold. And all of them can cause pulmonary disease. They can get into your lungs and cause these big nodules of disease in your lungs. Or if you're, you know, if your immune system is low, they can get into systemic circulation. They can also go to your brain. They can go to different parts of your body and cause big fungus balls to sit in there. We have, it's one of its, like a related fungus is out here, Josh, called coccidioides, valley fever. But this one, histoplasma, it's not only endemic, but you also find it amongst spelunkers, which is one of my favorite words.
Splunk.
So if you go cave diving and you're exposed to bat guano, histoplasma often likes to live in that bat guano. So it's associated with bat estuaries.
Now, one of the birds that is very associated with histoplasmosis are starlings and blackbirds. And if you recall, our four calling birds were in fact believed to be songbirds or blackbirds. So by day four, you're already being exposed. I mean, if you didn't catch Cryptococcus from the partridge in a pear tree, you now have to worry about histoplasmosis from the droppings of your four calling birds.
Yeah. And, you know, this is why I don't recommend going around a lot of these birds, you know, and if you have to take care of them nowadays, you know, farm workers, et cetera, should be given proper protection so you're not inhaling this stuff all the time.
Exposure will result in pneumonia-like symptoms within 1 to 3 weeks, so fever, chest pains, a dry, non-productive cough, and again, people with weakened immune systems, the old, the young, like the very old, the very young, and people with diabetes or AIDS or immunocompromised are more susceptible. So we've got our four calling birds, histoplasmosis, our three French hens, which is E. coli because, you know, hens, chickens, or salmonella.
That's true. So salmonella is commensal. You know, it hangs around the birds a lot. But then, you know, if you treat the eggs poorly, you know, depending on, you know, whether or not you wash the eggs, if you wash them, you have to refrigerate them. If you don't wash them, you keep them at room temperature. And if you treat them the wrong way, then they can overgrow that salmonella and then you ingest it and you're in trouble.
And let's see. So we still have five golden sphinxes or as well as our Six Geese a-Laying and our Seven Swans a-Swimming. And I feel like amongst the three of
Sure.
those, we're going to get to one of my favorite pun-ready diseases, the Mycobacterium
Okay.
avian complex, or as I like to call it, tuberculosis.
That's true. This is non-tuberculous mycobacteria. Some of the scarier stuff because A, they're tough to culture. They're tough to treat because you need multiple drugs in order to kill them. Yeah, the fact that it's like avium complex, it is found a lot with bird guano, but the truth of the matter is, Josh, is this particular mycobacterium lives in the
Well, it
soil,
lives in the soil and
and
birds
this is
because affected birds can become depressed, thin, weak, might have diarrhea, so they look like they have bird tuberculosis
right.
or tuberculosis.
We really don't have to worry about it by and large. You and me, Josh, we're probably just fine even if we're exposed to a lot of it. Occasionally, small children, they can get like a big lymph node, lymphadenitis, like a singular lymph node that doesn't quite go down even when you treat it like for staph, which is the most common form of lymphadenitis, right there, a big lump at the neck that won't go away. And that can be from Mycobacterium avium, because they're close to the soil and they're inhaling this stuff all the time. And once again, if you have HIV, if you have a transplant, if you're immunosuppressed, this is a opportunistic infection or an OI. And so birds carry a lot of these OIs. They're just dirty, filthy little feathered animals.
So you definitely don't want to have all these, 7 days worth of bird. Can you imagine being given, like, just being given seven birds sounds overwhelming. You were being given
That's
progressively
true.
larger numbers of birds every day for a week.
Yeah. So, you're getting logarithmic more birds every single day. And yeah, you gotta either like pluck them, kill them, cook them, and kind of preserve them. And then you have to preserve them properly so they don't give you salmonella or campylobacter in your tummy. Or maybe if you have like lots of acreage, you can kind of set them out there and let them roam around where you have less of a chance of inhaling a ton
Now,
of
one of
guano.
my favorite interpretations of this 12 Days of Christmas is, it's my true love gave to me, which implies that over the course of 12 feasting holidays, all these gifts are being exchanged, and
Yeah.
then you have aristocracy, you've got musicians, you have a lot of food-related poultry, and the
Sure.
implication is that all of this is leading up to a wedding.
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so like Twelfth Night is a good day
Right. So
to
you've had this big celebratory
wed your
holiday
betrothed.
season, and you're killing off like all these birds, and you can feed people goose
Yeah.
eggs, and you can have, I don't know, songbirds, and you can have 4 and 20 blackbirds baked in a pie. And when the pie is open, they'll all begin to sing, and isn't
And
that a dainty dish to set before a wedding feast?
that's pretty good. And so this works out because, winter time, the rest of your livestock, it's harder to get a hold of. So like your sheep and your
Your
cows and
chickens stop
everything,
laying
like this
eggs,
is
so
the
you have
bad.
to use them for nog.
So this is a bad time to be going for like your red meats and stuff. So instead you find all these birds that are hanging out.
Here's actually something I thought was very charming. Back in the 1800s, James Audubon wanted to get people to stop hunting all these rare birds. And other ones. So
Aww,
he
what a
said,
nice
instead
guy.
of hunting birds, let's start counting them. And there is, to this day, an annual Christmas count sponsored by the Audubon Society that is largely voluntary. And it's a whole bunch of people get together over the Christmas season and conduct local bird censuses in their area, identifying
Oh,
by
that's
sight or
awesome.
sound.
Yay for bird
Yeah, and you don't
watching.
even have, it's not even a bird watch. You could just find your local thing and you just kind of mark down and then send it into the Audubon Society, and that helps them keep a rough census of bird populations in the area. And that is a great way. You can sit there and
Nice.
be like, oh, there's four calling birds, five calling birds, six calling birds, and a delicious goose.
You probably don't want to use the word delicious when talking to the Audubon Society.
Semantics. Now, let's move on to our humans, because that's where we can start getting into some of the fun diseases as opposed to all the stuff you're catching. So let's say you've made it through the first week of Christmas with all these gifts from your true love and have somehow managed to avoid contracting any bird-related diseases. That's impressive enough in itself.
Sure.
But now we've reached the eight maids of milking. What disease do we have to worry about from milkmaids?
Yeah, so milkmaids used to get... would get cowpox, which is a related virus to the smallpox virus. And interestingly, those milkmaids who would get cowpox on their palms would be inoculated. Because their immune system got exposed to these cowpox, this was one of the very first vaccines. And so when they encountered smallpox, they just fight it off and they'd have a mild disease. And
now,
better, you
know, even more interesting for those of you who like to follow beauty and fashion.
How is this going to tie in?
Smallpox was known to be a very disfiguring disease, and it would leave your skin scarred and pocked in multiple places. Milkmaids were known, even at the time, to have very clear, fair skin. And the rationale behind this is that they were catching cowpox, the milder form, so then they developed an immunity to smallpox and would not develop the scarring. And this may be a deep ancestor of why we use a lot of milk-related beauty products even today, is because you still have those associations between fair-skinned milkmaids who contracted cowpox instead of smallpox. You didn't think I was going to be. That's really twice like now. It. You doubted me, and I tied it in.
You tied it in beautifully. That was extraordinary.
You guys, we're going to hit that Ebenezer Scrooge Christmas miracle where I'm just going to say something, and he's going to take it on faith.
Oh, my God. You can't. Listen, this is not something where you can sit here and, like, soften me up and then be like, oh, and by the way.
It's the Josh of Christmas past.
Yeah. The Josh of Christmas future comes in as like, oh, did you know that whooping cough comes from whoopee cushions? It's like, oh my God, that totally makes sense.
Just wait for it, folks. We've still got at least another 10 days of Christmas to cover.
I can't believe it. The Christmas Carol is supposed to be, you know, to break the icy heart of Ebenezer Scrooge and make him a good person. You're just using this as an opportunity to punk me.
But you don't...
This is not April Fool's.
I have not given you a single falsity or single falsehood yet. So you can avoid all the birds, hang out with the milkmaids, and possibly get cowpox and clear skin. Not a bad thing for our blushing bride in this 12 days.
I wouldn't recommend it anymore, given that smallpox has been eradicated. But if you want to hang out with some milkmaids, they're cool.
They're fun. So let's move on to our nine ladies dancing. What disease can we watch for in them?
Oh, so we have a few. We're getting into some bad ones, by the way, right now, people, and I apologize. But we have a few that I was thinking of. So dancing, in medical terminology, if you have abnormal dance-like movement, is chorea.
Chorea.
And that's...
North or south?
No. It is C-H-O-R-E-A, chorea.
Which comes from the Greek chorus, so that big group of people who would move throughout a play.
So this is, this is abnormal dance-like movements. And so we have a few that we can actually talk about. One of them is genetic, and that's Huntington's chorea, which is, very terminal, and you go into dance-like movements, and then you lose neurological control. Until
probably going to be hard to find nine ladies all with Huntington's chorea in the same place.
Well, they could be sisters. It is autosomal dominant, and it shows anticipation. So it could be either multi-generational or single-generational family. The other thing that you could do, though, is you could all catch strep, group A strep, and get Sydenham's chorea. And that one is much nicer because, given time and penicillin prophylaxis, it can go away. So that one is a much better prophylaxis. So those are two types. There are many other diseases that can cause chorea and choreiform movements. But
I'm going to take us one step further, or perhaps a leap further, and combine our 10 lords leaping and our 9 ladies dancing. And we're going to talk about the dancing plague, kind of like the dancing queen, but affecting many more people.
Yeah, the dancing queen was one person. This was like a whole group of people. And I think we've covered this.
We have. I do like these mass hysteria type ones, because it's like flash mobs, but in medieval times.
It was, except it was rather involuntary.
Was it?
And would cause a lot of hardship.
Was it involuntary? The world may never know.
Oh, I'm pretty sure we know.
So dancing mania, also known as dancing plague, yeah. Choria mania, St. John's dance, and the one that we've talked about it before is St. Vitus's dance, primarily occurred in mainland Europe and was really seen just between the 14th and 17th centuries. It affected men, women, and children who, when they caught it, would dance until they collapsed from exhaustion. Now, this is the PG version. People who suffered from these dancing plagues were reported to be doing a lot more than exclusively dancing. There might have been a little bit of these lords may have been leaping onto multiple things. But one of the earliest known incidents occurred sometime in the early 1020s in the city of Bernburg, where 18 peasants began singing and dancing around a church, disturbing a Christmas Eve service. One particularly notable outbreak occurred in Strasbourg in 1518, and it began when a woman, Miss Trophia, started to just dance fervently in the street. That was it, just, you know, dancing in the street, just like the song says. It's Trophia 2, Electric Boogaloo. And she danced somewhere between 4 and 6 days. Within a week, 34 others had joined in this spontaneous flash mob. Within a month, there were around 400 dancers, most female. About a quarter of these people would die from heart attack, stroke, or exhaustion. And one report even indicates that for a period, the plague was killing around 15 people per day. Physicians at the time said this was just, you know, caused by hot blood. So instead of prescribing bleeding, authorities encouraged more dancing because they believed the dancers could recover only if they danced continuously night and day and basically just danced it out of their system. Or city officials wanted people to dance right out of their town and take this problem to the next town down. And, you know, you can make an argument for both, I suppose. But to increase the effectiveness of this cure, local authorities would even pay for musicians to keep the afflicted moving. You know, like 11 pipers piping or 12 drummers drumming. And one of these dancing plagues may have inspired the tale of the Pied Piper of Hamelin.
Oh, that's a good crossover. I like that.
Yeah. So, of course, there are multiple theories as to what actually caused these dancing plagues, whether it was mass hysteria, whether it was ergo fungus, which is that same fungus we've talked about that might have led to the witch trials, as it structurally is similar to LSD, whether there was a stress-induced psychosis on a mass level, which, you know, this was the Middle Ages. This was not a happy time. It also could have just been people who were trying to carry out pagan rituals, and because the church sort of frowned on these, they could say, oh, no, we're not dancing as part of a, you know, winter solstice ritual. We're dancing because illness. Yeah, look, I need a saint to help stop me. So, as I said, we may never know the real reason behind these dancing plagues, and we don't really tend to see them all that much today. The closest we get in terms of mass hysteria plagues are plagues of laughing.
That's pretty good, though. I mean, that's, you know, that nobody, I'm guessing, gets too hurt with plagues of laughing.
Oh, we'll show you the fatalities some other time.
Oh,
that's why we'll wait till later. Now, another fun one, just because we're already talking about dancing mania and St. Vitus's dance, this didn't quite make it as far as Italy, which is surprising given, you know, tie into saints there, but a similar phenomenon in Italy was Tarantism, in which victims were said to have this irresistible urge to dance and fling their limbs about to be caused by being poisoned by a tarantula or scorpion. Now, nowadays, when people come in saying they think they have a spider bite, we usually go straight to, oh, it's methicillin-resistant Staph aureus or MRSA. But back in the day, doctors would say, right. Oh, you had a spider bite? Uh-oh, you don't feel like dancing, do you? Because that means you could have the deadly tarantism. And the earliest known outbreak was the 13th century.
Sure, and this is, oh, okay. And this, I mean, this, there was a dance of Spanish origin.
Which was the only known antidote. Believed the movements of the dance would separate the spider's venom from your blood, and that would cure you. Now, tarantism only occurred in the summer months, where St. Vitus's dance could occur all year, but was seen more often around the winter months.
Oh, and that makes perfect
sense. So there you go, guys. Let's run through it one more time. We have our 12 drummers drumming, 11 pipers piping, 10 lords a-leaping, and 9 ladies dancing, all with either St. Vitus's dance, tarantism, some kind of mass hysteria, or maybe they're just attending a wedding. Who are we to judge?
Or they've all come down with strep throat. And they've gotten rheumatic fever, and now they have...
Next, you need to feed all these people, so you're going to want to have a bunch of nog on hand. So let's step over to where we get our milk and eggs from our maids of milking, and they have some lovely, beautiful, clear skin, and possibly are carrying lighter autoimmune versions of smallpox or cowpox. Then you have days 1 through 7, where you have to watch out for your 7 swans a-swimming, 6 geese a-laying, 5 golden ring-necked pheasants, 4 blackbirds, 3 French hens, 2 turtle doves, and a partridge in a pear tree, which can give you cryptococcus, histoplasmosis, tuberculosis, or Macavian complex, and psittacosis.
Yep.
That's a lot of diseases.
Yep. That's just about everything. That's a lot of diseases. So you're either, counting down psychoses and ending up with, you know, bird-borne infections. That's a pretty good way to count down your days for Christmas.
Yeah. So I think we should probably leave off there. That's a good enough point to stop for our second of our 12 days of Christmas, where we have now managed to destroy a holiday carol that was not Baby, It's Cold Outside.
I know a lot of people are going after that song, but yeah,
Santosh, just for the sake of being obstinate, because I think I was the one who ruined "Baby, It's Cold Outside" for you.
But love, you did, and I don't know if this is the right kind of time and era to be talking about this particular song, because it's.
Well, yes, by today's standards, that song is super rapey. But put in the context of its time, and this is not to defend, this is merely to explain, in the context of its time, it was actually a feminist anthem. You have to remember, back in the 1930s and 1940s, even though we had passed the jazz age and the flapper age, women really could not go out unchaperoned. So you have a woman who has already put herself in a very compromising position. She is unchaperoned at a young man's house to whom she is attracted.
Oh, yeah. So she's already...
Yes, she would be considered the trampiest of tramps. Now, and you can tell, she doesn't really want to leave, but her biggest concern is what everyone else is going to think. My maiden aunt's mind is vicious. My brother will be pacing the floor. My father will worry. The neighbors will start to talk. You know, people do tend to zero in on a couple very creepy lines, but they also ignore the fact that she's worried about all these other people. What are they going to think? You know, the neighbors might start to think, at least there will be plenty implied. So this woman's caught between, if I stay any longer, everyone's going to think I'm a slut, even if we don't do anything. And since they're already going to think that, how can I find an excuse to go ahead and stay, and then I can come back? So by saying, oh, I'm drunk, I don't have any control, I'm just a helpless woman who is letting the alcohol make decisions for me. Now, we hear that in the 2018 world and go, this sounds suspicious. But back then,
Absolutely.
But in the historical context, what she's saying is, I know I have to go. All of society's laws are telling me I have to go. But we all know alcohol lets you act on these decisions you might not make when you're uninhibited. So if what's in this drink, sure. The joke being that the drink would have had almost no alcohol in it. He would have been serving her hot chocolate or tea or just a little tipple of something. So by drinking like a cup of hot cocoa and saying, what's in this drink? I must be drunk. I guess I'm going to have to stay and hang out for a little bit longer with you who I want to spend time with. So I'm going to go out now and say, as much as I love making fun of this song, it's actually a feminist anthem for the 1940s, because this woman is taking agency, trying to come up with the excuse that will let her stay where she wants to be and be very proud and open about her sexuality, even though she cannot talk about it because women did not have those kind of thoughts in the 40s.
Gotcha. So for the time, kind of, you know, sexy, cute, and a woman, you know, mostly focused on a young lady, you know, taking agency of her own sensual and sexual desires, but put into modern context, super creepy, and what the hell is
that said, on? Still one of my favorite songs, and I will continue ruining it for anyone and everyone. Just depends. I just have to figure out which story I'm going to tell them.
Yeah, it depends on what viewpoint they're coming
sure.
from, so you know what to destroy.
How many songs have I ruined for you? What's the running count without even invoking Tay-Tay?
I think
four. That's pretty good. Four songs I have just permanently ruined.
I can still, if I kind of, you know, hide in my own mind from, you know, everything you've said, I can still.
Well, that's it for our caroling edition of the 12 Days of Christmas. Thanks, Carol. And next time, we will be back for you with even more holiday hijinks and medical merriment. But for this week, that's it. Our theme music is composed by Rachel Leisure. As always, we love your comments, questions, and feedback. If you'd like to support us spiritually, emotionally, or financially, you can find links to do that in the show notes, along with any sources we used to research this week. Please leave us ratings and reviews. That's how other people find the show, and we get to share all of this wonderful trivia with even more folks. And until next time, as always, happy travels and happy holidays.
Yeah. Enjoy.